You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Jets podcast. It's Wednesday, April 10th, 2019. This is your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. Great to have you with us today. Our guest on this Wednesday show is Trevor Sikkema. You may remember Trevor joined us a couple months ago to talk about the NFL draft. Now, with the event approaching, Trevor's back, and over the next couple weeks, we'll try and bring in some draft experts to tell you about some of the prospects the Jets should be looking at. Trevor, of course, is with the Draft Network, which is my favorite website breaking down the NFL draft. They have a lot of great writers, a lot of compelling content, and guys who offer different takes. You know, not everybody has the same opinion on players, so lots of good back and forth evaluating some of the talent available to the Jets and other teams in the upcoming NFL draft. Let's jump into our chat with Trevor as we talk about the 2019 NFL draft. Joining us today, returning to the show, Trevor Sikkema from the Draft Network, just an absolutely wonderful website, give you so much great content on the NFL draft. He's here to talk with us since the draft is, well, just about 2 weeks away. Trevor, welcome back to the show.
Wow, you saying it's 2 weeks away almost made me have like a mini panic attack there. We're really that close to it, huh, John?
Not quite, because it's 2 weeks from tomorrow, I think. So we're still a little over 2 weeks, so you can calm down for one day, maybe?
No, it's good to be back with you, man.
Okay, so the big debate right now in the Jets fan base is whether they should keep the third pick or trade down. The Jets, because of the trade for Sam Darnold last year with the Colts, currently without a second-round pick. And, you know, Trevor, I'm not going to ask you – I mean, you can give me your opinion if you want, whether the Jets should trade down, but I'm going to tell you the concern a lot of people who are against trading down tell me, and it's that their view is that the Jets are going to get an elite pass rusher if they stay at three, and there's a concern that they won't get somebody as good if they move down, or that there's a big discrepancy between the guy they can get at three and the guy they can get – the pass rusher they can get if they trade down. So – how valid are those concerns? You know, how big is the gap between the top of the line edge rusher in this draft and the guy maybe you get a few picks later?
Sure. You know, that's really interesting. It's a really interesting question because, you know, up until about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I didn't really even think the Jets were considering trading down at all. I mean, this is obviously a team that you're certainly trying to build around Sam Darnold, and you're in a younger rebuild. Anytime you have a young franchise quarterback, that's kind of always the case. But I thought the Jets were kind of like standing pat at number three no matter what. They knew that they wanted to get an elite player. They weren't going to get cute with it, try to move around a little bit. But like I said, kind of over these last couple of weeks, I found out, yeah, the Jets, they're going to be entertaining some offers. They'll probably even entertain some offers when they come on the clock on draft night. They're one of those teams that might take that whole, you know, 10, 15 minutes to kind of figure it out. I think their board will be set and they'll know which guy that they want. But I think they're going to be on the phones and pretty busy throughout that because I do believe that, you know, especially when it comes to that edge rush position, let's just go ahead and say it. Josh Allen's the guy probably that they're going to end up selecting at number three if they're going to take an edge rusher. But for a long time now, you know, during this draft process, Ja'Kai Polite's been a little bit different because his draft process was just so bad. I mean, he clearly did not have the right people in his ear about how to train for the combine and this pro day and kind of how to go through interviews and things like that. Or maybe he just didn't care as much as he needed to. I really don't know. It just really wasn't a good draft process all around. But on the field, if we're just talking tape versus tape, Josh Allen, Ja'Kai Polite, and Brian Burns have some of the best edge rushing tape in the entire class. And I think all three of those guys, you could pick a name out of a hat and they'd be great for you no matter what. So Ja'Kai, like I said, his stock's a little bit down. You're probably not picking him in the first round anymore. But in terms of what you were saying, your initial question, hey, how much is the gap between, say, a guy like, okay, if you're pegging Josh Allen as the edge rusher the Jets would go with at number three, what's the difference between he and, say, Burns or Cleveland Farrell or Montez Sweat? Now, I think the gap's a little bit more for guys like Farrell and Sweat just because I think you're a little bit more scheme dependent. They're not as high of a ceiling as some guy like Brian Burns, but that's where it gets interesting. You know, if the Jets can move down to say, oh, I don't know, with the Jaguars, if they, for whatever reason, wanted to move up for a pass rusher from number seven, maybe if Buffalo's looking to get a big time playmaker or an offensive lineman of their choice up at from 9 to something like that, then you can move down a little bit. You can kind of think that you're still going to land a guy like Brian Burns, and maybe even if not, a guy like Montez Sweat, take a couple of extra picks there in that second and third round on day two. We know how valuable those could be, not only as draftees themselves, but potential pieces to move up and down, maybe jump back into the end of the first round, maybe end up selecting two guys in the first round if you kind of make a move like that. So all that to say, I didn't really see the Jets as a team that was going to move. But now that I know it's on their radar, it's in their plans to potentially move up and down the draft, I actually like the idea for them. They can't move too far down because they are still a team that, let's face it, you know, they're picking number 3 overall for a reason. They need help on that roster. They need good players. So they've got to be calculated with it, but they are a team that I think is going to entertain a lot of offers. And I think for the Jets specifically, there's a handful of offers that could make sense for them there.
Yeah, I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here and just ask you a question. You know, you mentioned a guy who, you know, had a rough pre-draft process. How much does that matter? And the reason I ask this is that I understand it's important, but, you know, as a Jets fan, like, I just go back. There's this famous story with the Jets 7 years ago about how Stephen Hill wore a suit and tie to the team facility on his visit. And that just totally wowed the Jets, and that played a role in them trading up in the second round for him. So I'm a little scarred from the past. And I know, look, I understand there are very important things that happen in this process, but that story just like, sticks in my mind. The Jets made such a big deal out of Stephen Hill wearing a suit to the team facility. So how much does this actually matter when it comes to, you know, how it impacts a player's stock?
Yeah, listen, the longer I do this, the longer I realize that the NFL is absolutely ridiculous with some of the stuff that they put stock in. But I will say that all of it just comes down to trust. This is big business, I think, at the end of the day. And you're putting these guys, you know, they're more than just football players, right? I mean, they're means to make money. That's just, I mean, that's the way that it is. Certainly their play on the field is a big part of that, but also who they are in the public. How coachable they are, how much of a base of a franchise they could be. All of this stuff goes into, especially when we're talking about top 5, top 10 overall picks. And so any little X factor you can get that might separate a guy, that might make a guy, like I said, more of a face of a franchise, more of someone that you would want to put in the spotlight to represent your team. I mean, for the Jets, I mean, Jamal Adams is the perfect example. I mean, that guy, yes, he plays the safety position, and even though I think the safety position drafting one super high, it's tough to justify that kind of value. He has been so worth it for the Jets just because of who he is, his face, right? And so that's a big deal when you're picking prospects high. So that all comes down to a trust factor. And when you find, like I said, the NFL, how they determine trust is sometimes a little bit out there and unorthodox and just downright illogical. But for a guy like Ja'Kai Polite, who we were talking about earlier, it's a matter of, hey, this guy has been in a college program, a Division I college program, for the last 3 years, 3 or 4 years. And a lot of his life has been very structured, and it's been structured at the highest and most efficient level. Yes, he has to still go to class and things like that, but really, this draft process is the first time in a long time where Ja'Kai is just—it's basically for, and not just for Ja'Kai, for a lot of these prospects, it is their first time on their own. Like, it's their decision to wake up early, right? I mean, like, they're not going to get in trouble if they don't. You know, it's not like they're going to get yelled at by a coach or something. It's their decision to eat well, to continue to train, to put your best foot forward, to study up on these interviews. And when you bomb some of these things, that hurts the trust level that teams can have with you. Because at the end of the day, they can't be your babysitter, right? I mean, like, the NFL teams cannot afford to look after you in the same way that maybe some schools do, just because it's so much more structured when you're at a university, especially a Power 5 university. So I think that's kind of all the things that go into it. The draft process is really wacky, and some really weird things happen. Some guys' stocks rise and fall because of silly reasons, but at the end of the day, it's just all about trust. It's how much a team can trust you, because, man, I've learned this more over the last 2 years covering a team as a beat reporter than anything else. If a coach can't trust you, you're gone. Like, you're useless to him. And many coaches are more stubborn than others. Some are more forgiving, But depending on who the head coach is, man, if they can't trust you, like, you're not going to be a factor on the team. You're going to be gone. And so they're not even going to waste a draft pick if they can't trust you. And so a lot of teams do a lot of weird things to see how far they can trust him. And so I think that's part of the draft process, makes it, you know, have those Stephen Hill stories where you hear it's a little wacky things like that, or what's going on with Ja'Kai Polite now, or, you know, we've heard stories in the past where how a prospect shakes somebody's hand could be the difference between them getting picked or whatever. But that's what it all goes into. It all goes into kind of that trust factor from team to team.
Yeah, and I'll give you one other story, and I'm sure I won't bore you with many stories. I'll try and limit the number of stories about past Jets draft visits that you have to endure on this show, but I do remember there was a story back 2007 about how Mike Tannenbaum was the general manager of the Jets at that point, apparently, like, asked the driver who picked up the prospect from the airport on their team visits, you know, the prospect was. And I remember there was a story about how the driver said that Darrell Revis was the most polite guy he'd ever encountered, and that played a role in the Jets picking him. So anyway, yeah, we'll move on.
I'm telling you, man, it's the same thing down in Tampa Bay, right? When they were deciding between Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, they did their due diligence all the way to the point where they went to, I think, Jameis's high school and asked questions of the janitor that was still there from when he was in high school and asked him about his interactions with Jameis Winston and how he was as a person and all this kind of stuff. So they go to pretty deep levels. They really do, because, you know, it's, again, you've got to trust the guy that you're drafting, especially at the top.
Sure, absolutely. We're here with Trevor Sikkema of the Draft Network, just a little over 2 weeks from the start of the 2019 NFL Draft. Now, Trevor, interested in your take on some of the offensive line prospects this year. The Jets need to upgrade their offensive line. And one of the things that I think is kind of compelling is that there seem to be lots of different opinions about where on the offensive line some of these top prospects fit, whether it's a Jonah Williams, whether it's a Taylor, whether it's Cody Ford. So where do you see some of these top prospects slotting in?
All right, I'll tell you, it's a pretty decent offensive line class. I really do. I think it's pretty good at the top. You're going to get some players who are really going to help you. I'll tell you the four offensive linemen at the top that I really like. I'll start with Juwan Taylor. He's the best pass protector in the draft. I fully believe that. He plays the right tackle position, and some people look at him and they go, oh, he's just a right tackle, as if that's some kind of a knock. As if guys like Von Miller and Khalil Mack don't go up against right tackles because, oh, look, would you rather have him go up against a right tackle or a left tackle? Probably the right, because right tackle is worse. Well, if you've got a guy as good at pass protection as Juwan Taylor on the right tackle side of your line, you're not going to have a weakness. And I think that is such a huge asset that people don't think about enough. They just think, oh, he's just a right tackle, right? We hear that word just thrown in there all the time. And I think that that's kind of a misconception that needs to go away. I think Juwan Taylor's a guy that can really almost complete an offensive line on both edges, and you can really neutralize something like that. And for a team like the Jets especially, that's important. Jonah Williams is another guy I like. He's got such great tape at left tackle. Yes, he's not as maybe toolsy as some of these other guys when it comes to length, but he's got great tape at left tackle. He's played left tackle for the last 2 years at Alabama, playing in some of the biggest games against some of the toughest SEC competition. He's played for championships in every single year that he's been a starter, both at right tackle and at left tackle for the last 2 years. You can't deny tape like that. Even if you want to nitpick, okay, maybe he's not as long as you want. Maybe he's, you know, a little bit this and that. He's got the tape, man. He's been up against good players. And him and Cleveland Farrell had their back and forth. But look, Cleveland Farrell's going to be a first-round pick too. So, you know, that's no knock against him. Cody Ford is such a mean cuss, and I love him as a potential right tackle, man. He is a lot of fun as well. He's more of a power guy than I would say Taylor would be as a finesse. But he also gives you versatility to play in the interior or on the tackle side. So I really like Cody Ford. He was really the highlight player from a pretty dang good Oklahoma offensive line. So big fan of his. And then I'll round it out, my fourth guy, Dalton Risner. I'm literally smiling talking about him because I was sitting near his podium at the combine. And offensive line is such a gloryless position, right? I mean, you could play 50 snaps in a game. You could have 49 of them. Great. And if you give up a sack on one play, you're a bum. You're trash. Get him out of here. He's terrible. You know, so they get no glory and they get all the blame oftentimes. And Dalton Risner, he's played on the interior. He's played right tackle. Some people even think he could play center. He's got quick enough feet to really play all of those. I don't think he'll play left tackle, but basically any other spot on the offensive line in the NFL I think will be good. They asked him at the combine. They said, hey, man, offensive line is such a tough position to play. You take such a beating on your body, and you don't get a lot of recognition for it. Why do you play offensive line? And he smiled right away, and he said, man, the chemistry that you get playing with that offensive line, and he used the term like going to war, going to battle with your boys every single week in the trenches. He said it's something he lived for. And he also, he pulled out a quote immediately. He said, there's nothing like moving a man from point A to point B against their will. And I just, you know, when he said, when he kind of talked about offensive line in that way, I went, damn, I'm drafting that guy. Like, I want that guy on my offensive line. Mentality is so huge for playing O-line, and Dalton Risner's got it. So those would be the top four guys for me. I think that Juwan Taylor and Jonah Williams will probably be more of the two top guys that might, you know, have that top 10 potential. Cody Ford, I could see going anywhere from pick number 10 to 20, and then Risner, I'd say, is a late first round guy. So there's a couple of tiers of guys that I like anywhere in the first round.
Yeah, lots of good stuff there. I'm a big Risner fan also. I really agree with it. It's something I've kind of changed my mind on through the years, because I used to be like one of those guys who said, like, oh, you can only take a left tackle early. But you just look at the way the league has changed. Like you said, the Von Millers, the Mac, they're lining up. I think right tackle now you can justify taking pretty early in the draft. I totally agree with you. A lot of people still don't agree. I think the league has changed.
Yep, totally. Nope, the league has changed in a lot of ways, and that's certainly one of them. You know, if you got your best pass rusher, why would you want to put your best pass rusher against the other team's best offensive line? I'm not here to sell tickets. I'm here to win football games. Put them against the right tackle. So I think the defensive coordinators figure that part out first, but offensive coordinators and offensive line coaches are kind of readjusting to this chess match, and they're figuring out that right tackle is a pretty important spot too.
The center position is kind of a hole for the Jets. Are Bradbury, McCoy the top two guys at that spot?
Yeah, I think so. Those guys just move so well. I mean, they've got such quick feet for being their size. McCoy is just, he's so damn smooth when it comes to redirecting. You know, he went up against Christian Wilkins. I was watching him earlier this year. He went up against Christian Wilkins, and even that tape against Alabama, man. He's getting off the snap, and you got some snap jumpers. I mean, like, you got Quinnen Williams, you got Christian Wilkins. You had Raekwon Davis. All those dudes are playing on the interior. McCoy handled a lot of them really, really well. So he's had a lot of stout competition. Bradbury, man, if you're looking to run zone, I don't know if there is a better offensive lineman than Bradbury. I mean, him and Chris Lindstrom are basically, you know, you can run stretch zone basically as much as you want. If you got a running back who likes to get to the sideline, holy cow, would you love Bradbury in the middle? I mean, he's a guy who can play in gap schemes as well. He can pull with different tackles and guards, moving from one side to the other in some split zone concepts. And so he would be a great choice as well. I think McCoy is going to end up being my number one interior offensive lineman, but I think Bradbury is going to be number two, and then Lynchum's going to be number three. Really, if you end up with any of those guys, I think you're going to be real happy about it.
So I want to ask you now about the wide receiver position. Jets do not have a second-round pick, but they do have two third-round picks. They have their own pick, and they also have the Saints pick because of the Teddy Bridgewater trade. And I look at the wide receiver position, and I'm not saying, look, I never go into the draft saying, like, okay, I have to draft X position with this pick because you don't know how things are going to play out. But I look at, you know, the way things are going to set up in the third round, and I see how deep this classes at wide receiver, and I say, you know, in the third round, you're going to get a guy who, he's a third rounder this year, but in most years, like, he'd be a second round pick, and he's just going to fall because of how deep this class is. I mean, am I accurate on that?
No, I think the wide receiver position is pretty dang deep this year. I think we're going to see a trend where wide receiver is going to be pretty deep almost every year, because that's just the way the football is going. I mean, I keep up with recruiting a little bit, and just the players that they're having play wide receiver and how they're playing them in college, it's just grooming a lot of offensive weapons in a lot of different ways. And so certainly the NFL's following suit in that regard, where they're correctly taking the types of players that college gives them. And ultimately that's what high schools are grooming as well. And so you kind of see it from the bottom level all the way to the NFL, this renaissance of potential passing weapons. And from the wide receiver position, that's definitely true. But I think that kind of can work out to the Jets' advantage because they have Jameson Crowder, they have a new one, they have Robbie Anderson. And so that's kind of a complete core as it is, not saying they couldn't get better, but I mean, in the third round, you're going to have players like DeMarcus Lodge, potentially Andy Isabella, Emmanuel Hall, Jacoby Myers, maybe Terry McLaurin, Riley Ridley, depending on how much the NFL likes or dislikes his testing. And so those are all a handful of guys that, and they can help almost any team. And certainly the Jets are a team where they can afford to sit back to the third round, take one of these wide receivers and kind of let them groom and play under the guys that I mentioned before. And so there's plenty of different weapons. And the best part about this wide receiver class is that it's a very pick your preference class, right? If you need a slot guy, you can get a slot guy in the second round, in the third round, in the fourth round, even later on day three, you could find that. If you need an X, you kind of got to take in the top 100 because it gets pretty, you get pretty risky with X receivers later in the draft. But flanker players, players with speed, players to stretch the field, you're going to be able to find them and take a chance on them in almost every round as well. And so it's a good class. It's a good wide receiver class. And I think the best part is that there's something for every team, no matter what round it is. So even though there are a handful of wide receivers that even say, like, I have my preference on that I would have over other receivers, you don't have to sell the farm to go up and get a guy, especially if you're a team like the Jets. I think that they could sit around and wait and get the right guy who has the right skill set to complement what they have already right now.
And I also love this year's tight end class. I think that's a pretty deep position as well.
No, tight ends. I mean, for sure. It's Noah Fant, TJ Hockenson at the very top. Those are guys who are going to be first-round picks, I think, for sure. You've got Irv Smith, Jay Sternberger. Those guys are going to be second-round picks for sure. But then even guys later, you know, like Dawson Knox, he's a player who, like, put Dawson Knox in basically any other offense in the country, and he's got way more production than he has right now. I mean, like, there's tape that I'm watching of him, which because they clearly ran their entire offense around A.J. Brown. Everything went through A.J. Brown, and there's plays where Knox is just wide open, basically waving his hands in the middle of the field, and Tiamu's not even looking at him. You can't even blame Tiamu for it. It's just kind of the way that the system is set up. But, you know, him, Dax Raymond, he's a guy from Utah State who's got potential. Josh Oliver is a true mismatch type that played out in San Jose State where he's a big guy who moves really well for his size. And then Trayvon Wesco and Foster Moreau are two players who probably going to end up going early day three that I really like as potential full-time tight ends that can both block and catch the football. You're always probably going to be searching for tight end ones right above them, but we're seeing, as many teams are doing in the NFL, the more tight ends that you have that are potential weapons, the better, because that just makes you more mismatch versatile, and that makes you a better attacking match for most defenses, no matter what week it is.
Yeah, and the Jets drafted a tight end, Chris Herndon, in the fourth round last year, and I think by all accounts,
okay,
for a fourth round tight end,
I gotta say this real quick. I was at the combine, and I was sitting there at Adam Gase's podium, and I swear to you, he got asked about Chris Herndon 4 separate times in a 12-minute span of the interview. And even Adam Gase, by the time the third and fourth questions came around, he was like, wow, you guys really like Chris Herndon, huh? So I don't know. They must have big plans for him. I don't know.
Yeah, the reason I bring up Herndon is, you mentioned Knox, and I think back to last year, and Herndon's production, well, like, wasn't that great at Miami, and it was because a lot of it, I think, was because he played behind Njoku for a number of years.
Right.
So, right. The stats, that's kind of what I think. And they may not be the exact same player, but I think of Knox where the numbers aren't really there for him. But he, like you said, like, I watched him and on the film, I'm like, wow, this guy's really good. I can't believe this guy only had he was in like the teens in receptions last year. I'm just like, this guy's much better than the stats look.
Yeah, they had Ingram. They had Evan Ingram before him. And if they would have just given him a little bit more of the Evan Ingram treatment, I think that would have served them a lot better, maybe win one or two more football games. But, hey, what do I know, I guess, right?
All right, so Trevor, I guess I'll close by asking about the corner position. It is a need for the Jets. It seems like this is not the greatest year for corners, but are there any guys you would have your eye on?
So, actually, funny you brought this up because I was talking about this on Twitter earlier. People look at this cornerback class and they say, like, okay, it's not great because it doesn't have that bona fide, like, top 10, top 15 talent, whether it's safety or a corner. So they automatically go, okay, well, it's a down class. But there's a lot of, I would say, like, nice corners who are going to make teams pretty happy. There may not be these, there may not be this abundance of CB1s who are going to be lockdown guys or franchise changers, but there's going to be a lot of CB2s. Like, for example, I think DeAndre Baker is going to be a good CB2. Now, if you try to make him a CB1, I think you're going to be disappointed. But as long as you have the right expectations, I think Baker could be a great second cornerback for a team. Arwarier, I'm a huge fan of as a good CB2. I think he could be one of the best CB2s in the NFL. Julian Love's another guy who I think that of. And so, you know, Byron Murphy. I really like Byron Murphy, but if you're sitting here trying to make him a CB1, you're going to be disappointed if you – but then on the other side, like, for example, let's take the Lions. They've got a guy like Darius Slay on the other side. If you let Darius Slay be the lockdown player and you got a guy like Byron Murphy on the other side, he's one of the best cornerback duos I can name, you know? So there's going to be a lot of really good complementary cornerbacks. So if you're looking to hit a home run with any of these guys, if Greedy Williams does not pan out for you, you're going to be out of luck. And Greedy Williams is even himself a projection because we saw last year, well, even, let's go two years before that to the beginning, he had a fantastic redshirt freshman year playing as a true man coverage corner, had a lot of success, and I don't want to be too mean and say that he coasted this year, but there were definitely moments where he was just not nearly as engaged as you would want him to be. So he comes in the NFL, perhaps he flips the switch, perhaps he's giving you it his all in every play, and if you do that, he certainly has the size, the speed, and the skill set to be a CB1 in the NFL. But outside of Greedy, I don't really see one. I just see a lot of guys who could be some complimentary corners, and the guys that I named are probably at the top of that list that make the most sense. But they're longer guys, they're athletic guys, they can play in that cover three scheme, they can allow you to be aggressive on the front seven. And so even though it's not great at the top, there's a lot of guys to still really like and guys that could help your football team.
All right, Trevor, thanks so much. Great, great to have you.
No, I appreciate it, John. Anytime, man.
Thank you for listening to our show today. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Hope you have a great Wednesday, everybody, and we'll be back again tomorrow to talk more Jets.